With email, everyone can communicate both instantly and invisibly, either as themselves or someone else. There are 67 million invented names on Facebook, many of them clearly living another life, less ordinary, or, at any rate, less checkable. Nobody knows who they really are. Encryption has made the average user a ghost, an alias, a simulacrum, a reflection. In this climate, only our buying power makes us real, and what self we have is open to offers of improvement. New eye colour, better insurance, slimmer body. From marketing firms and mobile phone companies, before they hand our data to governments, who aim to make us visible again in the interests of national security. In W.H. Auden's The Age of Anxiety, we meet Quant, a man who sees his own reflection in the mirror of a New York bar, surrounded by a facetious culture, by which he means a factitious one. It seemed to Auden an aspect of modern life that a man might see no correspondence between his social or economic position and his private mental life. Quant speaks to himself in the mirror. "My double, my dear image," he says. "Is it lively there, in that land of glass? Does yourself like mine taste of untruth?" I think of Auden's poem when I consider the two generations who have now spent their time looking at the glass of their computer screens. What have we been looking for? Is it lively there? And have we grown addicted to the taste of untruth? The internet offers a secret life to anybody. But how it happens, and who controls it, stirred me to write these stories. On every bright acre of the web, your personal data is harvested to furnish a neural network, a global mind, and your reward is to feel you contain multitudes. In 1964, 13 years before Apple sold its first home computer, Joseph Mitchell opened a profile in The New Yorker with the following sentence. "Joe Gould was an odd and penniless and unemployable little man who came to the city in 1916 and ducked and dodged and held on as hard as he could for over 35 years. Mitchell had written about Gould in the magazine 22 years before, but his new profile, Joe Gould's Secret, summoned the cloud of uncertainty surrounding the man's great masterwork, the oral history of our time, which Gould claimed to have spent several decades working on. Joseph Mitchell reported that Gould had never really started the book, and it was all just blank pages. Yet more recently, the writer Jill Lepore unearthed material from The Oral History, and she demonstrates that Joe Gould's Secret has fictional elements. Two writers guard an archive, Lepore says. One writes fiction, the other writes fact. To get past them, you have to figure out which is which. Mitchell said that Gould made things up, but Gould said that Mitchell did. What we know for sure is that Joseph Mitchell had a secret of his own. He had never written a word of the Joycean novel about New York that he said he would write. He lived for more than 30 years after his second Joe Gould piece came out, but never published another word. The conversation between a writer and his subjects is often, as Wordsworth said, too deep for tears, and it can involve finding sentences for realities and correspondences that are invisible to the naked eye. Such difficulties have always interested me. They inform my sense of life. Moreover, I find that literature, formerly the main arena of double lives, now takes second place to the web, where nobody today can be simply one thing. The stories in this book were written from the Wild West of the internet, before policing or a code of decency. We still don't have good manners or clear professional ethics. And the new ontological arrangements of the internet...